You found the killer bees. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Time now for Blessing or Stressing with our guy Garrett. HoustonStressins.com, HoustonStressins on IG, Texans Commenter on TikTok and on Twitter. How you doing this week? You ever lick the wounds just yet?
Good. I mean, obviously, you know, we have a lot of passionate fans, and it seems to be doom and gloom at times. But, you know, I'm still optimistic. This is a game that I had us. This was our first loss of the year I had before the year. Minnesota obviously was a surprise team, but I think we're right where we need to be. So I'm doing just fine.
I want to apologize that I haven't liked your tweets since about 10:30 today. I've been locked up in solitary confinement. So my apologies if you've seen me like fewer of your stuff than I usually do. It's because I've been in prison. So I apologize. What are we blessing or stressing on so far?
Well, I was wondering about that. I was kind of getting disengaged. I wasn't getting...
Stressing about that.
But yeah, as far as blessing, I was stressing about that. But the first topic I have is... You know, the most recent news, are we blessing or stressing the Texans signing Devin White? I'm sure y'all have been discussing this already.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I love it. I'm blessing it. I think that it's high risk, low risk, high reward. I think that you're getting a guy that if he lives up to anything like his resume says, at 26 years old, still has plenty left in the tank, he might bring some ability to the table. But more so than anything else, you need depth at linebacker right now. And what you saw out of Hanson, at least him alone, probably tells you could use an upgrade. Credit to Nick Caserio for always looking to upgrade more than just his starters to see what he has and maybe what he could get and what he could find. And I like it.
I'm not as high on Blankers when it comes to the reward that you can get. I think that Devin White's ceiling's pretty limited, but I do think that it helps your overall roster. I think it's an upgrade to the 53. I think he's an upgrade over Jake Hanson. How they use him will be interesting, but yeah, there's nothing to stress here. Like, if it doesn't work, you cut him next week. Like, so what? What did you lose there? Like, a league minimum salary that's prorated down to 1 week? Like, there's zero risk here. I agree with Blankers on that front. As far as, like, who he's going to be, I don't think he... You know, starts for you at any point. I think he might be like a rotational linebacker. For me, it's more depth. Like, if there's guys that get hurt, obviously he would start. But yeah, I'm blessing this. There's zero distress.
Yeah, so I'm blessing and stressing. The reason I'm blessing is the reasons y'all said is because he's a low risk, high reward kind of guy. He's more of a speed linebacker. And then you throw in the fact that D'Amico Ryans is the linebacker whisperer. He can maybe rejuvenate this guy to get him back to where he's at. But the reason I'm stressing is because what this may indicate for the health of the linebacker room. This has me absolutely worried about Christian Harris and Azeez Al-Shaair. So it seems Azeez may be, you know, longer than what we thought. But really, I think that this is a telltale sign that Christian Harris is injury, like we've all suspected, maybe even worse than what we thought was worse and worse and worse. So that's why I'd be stressing on that.
I can't push back too much on that because that could very well be true. And I know zero about the status of Christian Harris and Azeez Al-Shaair. I know that Azeez hasn't been placed on the IR. So if it was something like, okay, where he tore his ACL, or, you know, I think we would probably know that by now. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the solace I take there. The Christian Harris thing is a complete mystery to me.
Thing.
He's been out for 2.5 months after he walked around a training camp that re-aggravated a strained calf. So I don't know that. I think that Nick Caserio would make this move even if Christian Harris was coming back this week, though. I think it could be something that they saw on tape and didn't love Jake Hanson a whole lot. Not dismissing what you're saying, but I still think that Caserio makes this type of move even if they knew for a fact Harris was coming back soon.
I agree.
Because he's always looking to upgrade the roster. He did with T.R. Tartt last year, late in the year.
Like, Derek Barnett.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that I saw some video from practice today that I think that they had Azeez was back out on the field and Toto, but whether they
Toto
are Toto
was Harris or Azeez did not practice.
Okay.
Because
I'm not going to be overly concerned about that. I think the main thing that you have reason to stress about is the fact that I think we all are hoping that we're wrong in what we're feeling, but we're all feeling like Christian Harris might be done for the season or for a way longer period of time because it might be way more severe than what anybody billed it to be.
Yeah, it's 100% speculation on my part, so I hope y'all are correct. It's just something I kind of... That was when I read that news, that was my first thought.
It could be right. It could be. I think they're two separate things, but it could be right.
Yeah.
It could be right.
All right, well, next up I got blessing or stressing the Texans' end-of-game management and also challenges. You know, early on, I was kind of not really stressing on it, thinking it was fine, but, you know, D'Amico's a young coach, but it's been almost a year and a half, and there's been several instances... for both end of half, you know, before halftime and end of half for the game. That kind of has me stressing as well as challenging. He's been pretty good overall, but there's definitely been some, like in the game against Green Bay, where he didn't challenge the backwards pass, which may or may not have been. But to me, at the very least, you know, our defense as a result of us trying to decide whether or not the challenge was out of place and resulted in a touchdown. So even stopping the clock there would have been fine. But the end of game stuff kind of has me worried how conservative we are. It's like we just want to drain the clock. We're not aggressive. So I don't know where you guys sit on that.
There's absolutely no question you should be stressing. I'm stressing because of the fact that, like you said, we've seen it multiple times now. We've seen where they either went to the end of the half or the end of a game where they didn't even get a chance to get points, because you remember the debacle with the referee and trying to get that straightened of when he was going to start the clock, and they didn't even get anything off. And then D'Amico just kind of said, that's our bad, to what happened against Green Bay and all the different issues that they had there, to the fact that we knew that D'Amico is a leader of men. We knew that he was an upgrade over the other coaches that Nick has brought in. And we all felt great about D'Amico. It's his first time as a head coach. He's going to make mistakes. It's going to be a work in progress. Where we haven't seen the need for it in a lot of different areas of head coach in the NFL, this is one where there's definitely room for improvement.
Yeah, I'm stressing this. This is something that I noticed last year, whereas D'Amico wasn't a very good like game clock manager, and was hopeful that, hey, you know, it's year one, he'll figure it out, and you know, things will be better going forward, and there still is time for that. But you know, the challenge of the lateral the other day, I'm not even sure they overturned that because they didn't have a great camera on it. It's very difficult to call. But was it worth the challenge? Yes. And then what happened the very next play makes it even more difficult, because you do the whole hindsight 2020. Oh, throw the challenge. Even if you're wrong, it gets you a timeout and you're able to align what you need to do defensively. I'd forgotten about the Colts in week one of the first half. It's a great point. And then how about two or three weeks ago? I can't remember. It was the Bills game. Whenever they had the intentional grounding, whenever they were already in field goal range, like, why are you even throwing the ball in this spot? So, yeah, they've had some issues there. And like, whoa, that's Bobby Slowik doing it. D'Amico's got the power to override all of that. So, yeah, I'm stressing that. Too. Yeah, I think he's below average as a head coach, you know, 1 through 32. He's below average in game management, clock management. Don't forget he had the starters in the game down by 27 with minutes left to play against Minnesota. People are crushing Todd Bowles this week because he got Godwin hurt because he was in a 10-point game. Still possible, still a chance to win. D'Amico had him in down by 27, and no one bats an eye about that. So, yeah, I think he's below average clock game management. I think he's elite in leadership and, you know, being able to build a culture and things like that.
Yeah, and it's definitely concerning too when you hear his explanations about these situations. He has a chance to say, I would have done this, but he kind of doubles down on some of these, you know, the end of game with the 3rd-and-12 call or 15 call. And I don't know if that's him protecting Bobby Slowik, but to your point too, he has the authority to be the end-all be-all. So, and my opinion is, if you are the defensive-minded head coach who wants to do a certain philosophy in that situation, you want to run the clock out, then why isn't that relayed to Bobby Slowik and say, hey, do not throw the ball. Do not stop the clock. And the same thing with the Bills game. No matter what, do not stop the clock. Like, all it takes is one word in the headset. Instead, you have 100% delegation to Bobby Slowik, putting trust in him to make the right decision. You should have the authority to go step in right there.
How about C.J. Stroud? I don't know what our philosophy was on that last drive. Yeah. How is that not clear? Like, I mean, and I get it. I get it up until the 2-minute warning, and the Hutchinson catch at the sideline happened on the big side of it happened before the 2-minute warning. That led you to the 2-minute warning. So I get not really knowing there, because you're kind of like in between. Yes, you were in field goal range, but you still wanted to keep the ball. You still wanted to use clock. You still wanted to score. But after you converted the 3rd and whatever it was, 12 or whatever, to Hutchinson to get the first down, the sliding catch near the sideline, that took you to the 2-minute warning, if I remember correctly. So you have the entire team over there. That's the point
of
time.
No one's talking
this
about your game
is
plan.
What our idea. And even, like, you could go both ways. You could be like, hey, CJ, you're the man. Go score a touchdown. You could be like, hey, you know, the offense hasn't been, you're not going to say this, but like, you in the back of your mind, the passing game hasn't been there, so we want to run the ball. Hey, CJ, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to use up as much clock as possible, take care of the football. So the fact that CJ Stroud didn't know that after they come together on the sideline during the 2-minute warning is problematic.
You talk about whether it's Belichick or some of the defensive-minded head coaches in this league, they don't get involved on a play-by-play situation, but you damn well know that in big-time, very urgent situations like this, they are going to make their opinion felt. They are going to make it clear and known, this is what I want to do. And it seems like and nothing's more telling than CJ's comment that there not only wasn't one guy's opinion versus the other, there was probably no comment at all from either guy, and that's problematic.
He said basically he was guessing. Like, yeah, it takes one second to say, hey, this is what we're doing. Yeah, so that's got us stressing for sure. Next up, I got, are we blessing or stressing the fact or the belief that the Texans' offensive line can correct this pass protection issues relatively soon? I think I'm going to go in the minority and say, yes, I am optimistic and blessing the fact that they can correct it. To me, the big overarching theme for these issues is, number one, it's loud road environments. And then as a part of that, underneath that, is obviously it's communication. You know, it's being able to pick up blitzes or stunts or simulated pressures. So we've played in, you know, two of the loudest stadiums in the games that were the worst, which was Green Bay and Minnesota. And then we also obviously had some issues with Indy as well. But you look at the rest of the schedule, too, as far as the defenses we are playing, as far as like EPA per quarterback, like basically how difficult it is for a quarterback. We've played three of the top five defenses already. So things will lighten up a lot more. And then we don't really have very many strong road games besides Kansas City. So
I'm stressing the hell out of this because I don't believe that it's fixable by just doing little things. I think that the overriding concern that I have is based on the fact that we went from penalties, we went from false starts, we went from illegal procedures in the way we line up, and the fact that those were issues with the O-line to now pass pro is awful. The fact that, you know, you've got guys that just aren't even communicating on the line of which guy's going to take the outside speed rush, who's going to worry about the stunts inside and some of the moves and where the pressure's coming from, to where this is going to be the bugaboo and the main theme of this team. It seems like it already is for the first, you know, half of the season almost, but it seems like it's something that it's not going to go away quickly. And I don't think it's fixable. We were talking about a couple segments ago. I think Kenyon Green's the first guy that's going to face the possible replacement. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you can't just put it on one guy. This is an overwhelming theme of the season for these five guys.
I think it's important to put caveats here. Like, are they good enough to fix it relatively soon to accomplish what? Like, do I think they can beat the Colts at home? Yeah, I think they can beat the Colts at home. And I think you're onto something, too, with the home-road thing. Like, their offensive line has played better at home versus on the road. Their offensive numbers are better at home than they are on the road. I do think that there is something to that, whether it's, you know, the crowd noise. It's got to be crowd noise more than anything else. Because,
silent count. They obviously don't know how to use a silent count that well.
No. Like, you see, they communicate to Kenyon Green and then, hey, tap the center on the side of the hip and let's snap it.
But it's
there.
Also, too, I don't want to interrupt you in your segment, but it's also the play call getting in. Is Bobby getting the play call in too slow? Is CJ calling the play too slow? And then you get lined up with 2 seconds and now you're trying to figure out this whole puzzle and you just snap it and you're just kind of doomed.
You see about three or four times a road game where Stroud late in the play clock is, give me the ball, give me the ball, and you still see him pointing around. So they're not getting the call in quickly enough. No, you're absolutely right. And I think D'Amico even alluded to that, where we need to get the play call into the huddle quicker, we need to get out of the huddle quicker, we need to get to the line quicker, that way we have more time to execute, you know, XYZ, so we can execute, you know, the right coverages and where we're going to go in protection. Logan Farlow, who used to be an intern here, he does some really good breakdowns on TikTok. I was watching one today where he's looking at the offensive line and you could see them pointing the right way. Like, you see Laremy Tunsil point to his left, you see Kenyon Green point to his left, you see then Kenyon Green snap, you know, touch Juice Scruggs. Hey, that's a snap. Snap the ball. And then Laremy Tunsil goes right. It's like, I'm not an offensive lineman guru. I'm very much just a layman, but it's like, it looks like their coverages are correct, and then they're just not doing them. CJ Stroud was talking to the media today, and he said, look, we're in our coverages correctly most of the time. It's just about execution. So I don't know what's going on. Like, a few weeks ago, I was bringing up Strouser. You know, maybe it's not being coached all that well, but it's like, he coached them up pretty good last year with this patchwork offensive line. Now it's still going on 6 weeks later after we saw a questionable offensive line. Are they not coachable? Like, there's a lot of factors here. I think their offensive line is capable enough to win a poor division, to be okay at home. But them winning a tough road game, you know, in Baltimore at Kansas City, no, I don't think their offensive line gets there. I don't. So I'll stress it.
So that's exactly what I was going to say is, you know, it can be a Band-Aid and get us through the rest of the year and we can still obtain our goals. But at some point, the way it projects right now, we will have to play a tough road game in the playoffs. And at that point, we will wonder if this problem will rear its ugly head again or not. And I would suspect, yes, there's nothing to tell us otherwise at the moment.
Yeah, because, you know, you're absolutely right in the fact that we talked the other day about, from the standpoint of having a veteran center that's able to pick up a lot of coverages and pick them up quickly, to CJ saying kind of what Jalen Hurts went through in the fact that when you lose a veteran center, it's on the quarterback more to pick them up too. But then if the play isn't in time, in the huddle in time, now you're really up against it for all three factors that are factoring in. And that's not even getting to when you start figuring out, when you start seeing, you know, the pre-snap and what they're doing and how they're they're moving around. It's a very complicated process, but right now, you know, I'm kind of with Jeremy in the fact that it's more on whether they're coachable or not, and if they're listening or not, or they're just too stubborn to change their ways from the veteran perspective.
Battery Chuck brings up, you know, I wonder how much of this is on an offense or a center who's playing in the NFL. That's as a center point. For the first year. Obviously, he played, you know, guard last year. You know, I'm trying to pick up the clues, like, on who's making the calls offensively pre-snap, and CJ talked a little bit today, like, how he wants to help Juice. So if he's helping Juice, that tells me that Juice is the one making the call, right? Because if he's trying to provide aid, he's trying to help him. Juice is the one making the call. So I think that there is something to that. I don't know the fix, though. Like, I think it's more than just one simple thing.
A lot of things.
I think it is upgrades at specific positions, namely left guard. Maybe center if Juice is getting the calls wrong. Although you have players that are saying the calls are right, they're just not executing. Maybe it is a different offensive line coach. Maybe it is a different philosophy. But I think it's a variety of a bunch of different things. I don't think that it's one easy, quick fix. Would I want Kenyon Green bench for Kendrick Green? That's a move that I would have made today. But do I think that's the elixir that fixes it all? No, I don't.
But we could also argue, too, the reason that hasn't been done is because of his draft capital position, first rounder, so he probably gets a longer leash. But I think one thing, too, we haven't mentioned as well is it's the pass pro as a whole. It's not just the O-line, although they have had their fair share. I mean, tight ends and running backs are just as guilty, especially last week. So, I mean, we basically have said those. We just all listed five or six little things, but collectively that becomes a big thing. So I have another one.
Last one.
Okay. Last one I got is, are we blessing or stressing the Texans being 5-2 despite everything going on? I'm blessing. I mean, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I get there's, you know, things that haven't been perfect and the frustrations from the fan base. But if you look at a big picture perspective wise, we're 5-2. I believe we have a 1-game lead in the division. If we beat Indy this week, it becomes 2. But de facto, that becomes a 3-game lead since the tiebreaker. So this is a big game coming up. We're right where we want to be. So despite everything that's going on, and I guess you had the argument, we haven't played our best ball yet and we're still in this position. So I'm blessing.
I'm blessing it simply because of the fact that you still have a winning record. You still are in a position of control, as you mentioned. You're not the Niners. The Niners dealing with injuries are wallowing around 500. They've lost both of their wide receivers, one of them for the year. You've got a guy that's out 4 weeks and he's ahead of schedule. So I think that your best football still can be ahead of you. What you're dealing with is even as bad as the offensive line might be, there's still ways and there's opportunities to fix it, whether it be the trade deadline or to make switches or to just make sure that maybe D'Amico's right and they work on different communications and things to get through some of this. But they're too talented a team for me to be stressing. I believe that being at 5-2 and still having issues like this is far better than being full of and overladen with issues like this and being 3-3 or 2-4 and really having to scratch and claw the rest of the season.
I'm going to be a little contrarian here. Now, I had them 4-3 through 7 games. The fact that they're 5-2, they're better than I thought they would be. So I'm blessing the aspect that they're 5-2. But I really don't care about record a whole lot. What are you talking about, Brandon? I mean, you need a good record to qualify for the postseason. But if the Texans didn't qualify for the postseason, we'd be talking about what a disaster of a year this is. So the way that I've been viewing this whole year is like, how far away are the Texans from being at the apex of the AFC? You know what I mean? And I feel like the Texans are further away from the AFC apex today than they were at the start of the year. I felt like they were, and maybe that was my fault. Maybe that was my misread of where the Texans were. My misread of where the Texans were relative to the Baltimore Ravens or the Kansas City Chiefs. I can own that I was the one that was wrong there. But my personal feeling, even though they're 5-2 and I had them at 4-3, so blessing the aspect that they're better through 7 games than I thought, I think that the gap that separates them from Baltimore and Kansas City is greater than what I thought it was at the start of the year. So I'm stressing that part of it.
That's fair, and it's hard to argue that.
Thank you.
That's what we want. My
co-host never said well argued or well
said.
What the hell's wrong
with you?
You can come in as the mediator.
Next time you get some guys some tension going, just call me and I'll come.
We should have
pretty much need to be here daily.
We should have a debate. daily. All right. Great stuff, Garrett. What are you working on this week at HoustonStressons.com?
Same stuff. So actually this week I am working on a content creator directory, which is also journalists. So I'm basically going to have like a directory for anyone and everyone
to follow. I'll send you my information.
Yeah. With your approval, of course. I'll put you right at the top.
Screw the approval.
Sounds good.
But yeah, so basically a directory and then still working on the Discord on there. And I wrote an article actually about that O-line discussion if you want to read on articles and build my newsletter. So all the same good stuff.
If you want to do a little investigative journalism on why I got locked up, I'd give you a quote or two if you end up doing that. Garrett, great stuff. HoustonStressons.com, IG Houston Stressons. You can find him on TikTok and Twitter at Texans Commenter as well. Talk to you next week.
Appreciate it. We bless him.
GarrettHoustonStressons.com. All right, so on the Killer Bees.
ESPN 97.5.